I'll be reading the 10th chapter of Luke, verses 25 through 37, and that's found on page 96 in the New Testament in your pew Bible. The parable of the Good Samaritan. A teacher of the law came up and tried to trap Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to receive eternal life?" Jesus answered him, "What do the scriptures say? How do you interpret them?" The man answered, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. And love your neighbor as you love yourself." "You are right," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But the teacher of the law wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus answered, "There was once a man who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when robbers attacked him, stripped him, and beat him up, leaving him half dead. It so happened that a priest was going down that road, but when he saw the man, he walked by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite also came there, went over and looked at the man, and then walked on by the other side. But a Samaritan who was traveling that way came upon the man, and when he saw him, his heart was filled with pity. He went over to him, poured oil and wine on his wounds, and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own animal and took him to an inn, where they took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. "Take care of him," he told the innkeeper, "and when I come back, I will pay you whatever you spend on him." And Jesus concluded, "In your opinion, which one of these 3 acted like a neighbor toward the man attacked by the robbers?" The teacher of the law answered, "The one who was kind to him." Jesus replied, "You go then and do the same." The word of God for the people of God.
Our message today is a covenant video. We are encouraged to watch with open hearts and minds, remembering that this film is ultimately about hope, partnership, and transformation. We'll now watch Go and Do Likewise.
Woven into the DNA of the covenant. Being compassionate for people, considering people around the world as our neighbors and reaching out to them. I think you can look at these last 80 years as a reflection of them and a growing upon that.
As I look back over these 80 years, I see people speaking into the church and to CWRD directly, who have helped us grow and develop. All of these people, all of these organizations, have helped us become a better organization.
Every story has a beginning, and this one starts long before Covenant World Relief.
Covenant World Relief.
Covenant World Relief.
Covenant World Relief.
Was ever called by that name. The Evangelical Covenant Church began as a movement of Swedish immigrants in the late 1800s. They called themselves mission friends, people who believed faith was not only confessed, but lived. Early Covenanters studied scripture with both head and heart, and when they saw need, their hands followed. This conviction that evangelism and compassion are inseparable would shape everything the covenant did next. When World War II ended, the devastation was impossible to ignore. Millions displaced, cities flattened, hunger stretching from Europe to Asia. For covenant churches, faith demanded action. Their values, compassion, mercy, and justice, necessitated response. In 1946, local congregations began sending small offerings overseas, money and supplies for war-torn communities in Finland, Germany, China, and Japan. What started as a few coins became the Covenant World Relief Fund. The work was simple at first, rebuilding homes, providing medical aid, shipping food, clothing, and farm tools. But the challenges were immense. There were logistical barriers, how to get supplies into war zones. There were language and cultural gaps, and there was always more need than money. It wasn't easy, but persistence became part of covenant theology. To relieve suffering was to live the gospel.
Someone asked the late Cliff Bjorklund if it was actually possible to bridge over to so many masses of hungry and homeless across the world, to which Cliff responded in his usual convincing way, "We have a God who deals with the impossible."
The Covenanters found that the work doesn't stop when wars and crises are over. Once the emergency passes, the harder task begins, rebuilding lives, not just structures. They began to see that poverty and suffering were not temporary problems, but long-term conditions shaped by injustice, inequality, and broken systems. Relief alone could not bring restoration.
To solve problems like this takes time, it takes long-range thinking, and it takes what we call development. More than a band-aid, more than a quick solution to a difficult problem, it takes planning and hard work, and it takes people, friends like you, who will stay with us over time, not leave when the cameras leave, but stay with us as long as the people are here, as long as they need our help.
By the 1970s and 80s, a new understanding was taking hold. Development was no longer an afterthought. It was the mission. Covenant World Relief realized that true change happens when communities lead their own transformation. Under Covenanters like Cliff Bjorklund, Tim Eck, and Jim Sundholm, the organization began shifting from doing for people to doing with them. This wasn't charity, it was partnership. And partnership requires humility, listening before acting, trusting local leadership, and learning that the Spirit was already at work long before Western aid arrived. As the 20th century ended, that posture of equality became a defining mark of Covenant World Relief.
Thanks to the presence of our partners,
because of our partnership,
through our partnerships, we are partnering with partners literally all over the world.
The years ahead would take this conviction even deeper. Relief would evolve into development, long-term, locally led transformation. And through decades of change, one truth remained. Covenanters serve best when they serve with.
My name is Paul Swanson. I am the Manager of Operations for Covenant World Relief and Development. I'm here today in the archives. What I've noticed here in the film room is that all of these films that were distributed to churches all across the United States in the 70s and 80s, and all of their titles are the same as themes that we're dealing with today. Drought, famine, hunger, war, conflict, refugee. The difference today is that we are now partnering with organizations all around the world to go deeper in community development.
The Covenant World Relief and Development Partnership with HCC is the largest and most unique partnership that we have. I have told the leaders of the Hindustani Covenant Church that they are largely responsible for me even pursuing the position of Director of Covenant World Relief and Development. They so inspired me, and the thought of being able to work with them in disaster response and long-term development really got me excited. When I was there, they began taking me around to multiple locations where they were doing various kinds of humanitarian work, long-term development, and I began to see a level of expertise that, frankly, I'd never seen before. I saw effectiveness, impact that I'd never seen before. I saw the rag pickers in Govandi in Mumbai. I saw them working with Muslims, where the Muslims knew they were a Christian church, but there was this level of respect where they welcomed to come in to work with these young boys and girls who were then given the opportunity to be able to get enrolled in formal education so that they could then change their lives and break the cycle of poverty. I saw their work in water. I saw their work in agriculture. I saw their work with women who were trapped in the sex industry in Pune. And I saw an organization that had a staff that was so highly trained and developed. I went back to my boss at the time and said, this is an organization, this is a church that we need to be connected with. And so we entered into a partnership that began in 2005 and continues to this day.
When I walked into Home of Hope, I really wasn't sure what to expect. And I walked in, and the first thing that I could hear was laughter. You know, laughter of women that were sitting around on the floor, making communion wafers, having conversations. But also a seriousness about wanting to do it well, taking seriously this opportunity to be able to learn skills that they know are going to contribute to their own lives and their own flourishing. It was really beautiful. When we were at Home of Hope, we met a woman named Pooja, and she had a powerful testimony.
आज से 17-18 साल पहले का बात है. मेरा गांव में शादी हुआ था. और मेरा जब एक लड़की हुआ, तब मेरे को मेरे पति ने तलाक दे दिया. छोड़ दिया मेरा माँ बाप का पास. तो मेरा पति छोड़ दिया बोल के मेरा माँ बाप भी मेरे को छोड़ दिया. तो मतलब घर से अकल के दिया है, निकाल दिया. तो मैं स्टेशन पे, हमारा उधर का रेलवे स्टेशन है, स्टेशन पे आके मैं उधर ही बैठ के रो रहा था, सुसाइड करने के लिए जा रहा. तब अनजान दो लड़का है, वो लोग मेरे को समझाया क्यों सुसाइड कर रहा है. पुणे में बहुत अच्छा काम है, जैसे बिल्डिंग का काम है, तुम काम करके तुम्हारा लड़की को संभाल सकता है, तुम्हारा पेट पर संभाल सकता है. वो क्यों मरने का, सुसाइड क्यों करने का, सुसाइड मत करो. हमारा आज रात को हमारा ट्रेन है, हमारा साथ चलो, तुम्हारा उधर अच्छा काम दिलाऊंगी, फिर काम करके तुम तुम्हारा बच्चा का तुम्हारा पेट पाल सकता है. तो मैंने उनको भरोसा करके पुणे में आया. पुणे में आने के बाद वो लोग मेरे को भेज दिया.
I had heard quite a bit about the Home of Hope and the ministry in the Red Light District. I had read quite a number of applications and reports on this project. And even still, as I arrived and as we were in the city of Pune, they put us in the rickshaws and they drove us right into the Red Light District. And I will say I was completely unprepared.
This is the place called Budwar Pit, and Budwar Pit is the India's second largest red light area. So more than 6,000 registered girls are in this area. So entire building, whatever you see, they are filled with the girls. And the girls, those who are in this red light area, the age start from the 10, 11, 12, till it goes to the, whatever the maximum they can do it. So how these girls are in this area? Their stepmothers, brothers, so father, or sometimes we have come across their husband has sold them in the sex market, and every month they come and collect the money from this. Many girls try to flee from this area, but it's very difficult for them.
उतना इतना ही किया है जो जैसा ने आगे बढ़ा मेरा साथ भी तो और कोई आगे ऐसा मेरा जैसा बाहर निकलना चाहता है आगे बढ़ना चाहता है बाद में हिंदुस्तानी चर्च में आया अक्षय सर से मिला है
When in that situation, when the Hindustani Covenant Church comes and tells us still like we want to rescue the girls, we want to take out these girls from this red light area, that time the mother, the brothel and the mediator, they come together and they say like, okay, you want to rescue these girls, this girl has been sold for this amount. She has been with us 4 years and the cost we have invested is around this amount. So they count the interest rate on that amount and that ransom amount Hindustani Covenant Church has to pay to rescue that girls. It's a long process, but Hindustani Covenant Church is trying their level best to rescue the girls from this red light area.
Har cheez sikha rahe, shilai ka kaam sikha ya, sabun attar banane ka sikha ya, jewelry banane ka sikha ya. हाथ से सिखा के अमर को सर्टिफिकेट भी दिया है तो छोटा एक अभी एकदम ही छोटा बिजनेस निकला है उस तो पता नहीं क्या है आगे थोड़ा थोड़ा आगे बढ़ने का कोशिश कर रहा हूँ
आई एम सो थैंकफुल फॉर HCC एंड फॉर द वर्क दैट दे डू विद दीज गर्ल्स टू मीट देम टू बीफ्रेंड देम एंड टू मेक अ वे for them to be rescued and get out of a life and a situation of such darkness into light.
I've seen how the Hindustani Covenant Church works in very diverse communities, but overall, they're either outcast communities or low-caste communities. Communities where people have been told that they are worthless, that they're not able to better themselves, that they're not able to grow. And Hindustani Covenant Church gives them the confidence they need. And I've seen how communities have come to a place where they have never expected to be able to do the things that they have done to better their community. There are, in the kingdom of God, no borders, no fences. We don't just focus on people who are near us, or look like us, or think like us. We go beyond borders. We go to people who are far from us. They are our neighbors.
Looking at the whole history, again, of the Covenant Church, not just Covenant World Relief and Development, there has always been this commitment, for sure, to relief and to caring for people in distress around the world. But there's also been a thread of justice in there. And I think that that has taken a larger and larger role over the years to really look at sustainable development and projects that will change the situation that people are in, and not just respond to their immediate need, but to allow them to live into a fullness that is a life of justice, of biblical justice. And that's been an exciting thing. We as a covenant have partnered in Ecuador. That's one of the longest standing places that we've been. And we as Covenant World Relief and Development, our partnership has really been with the group called FASE. FASE does a number of different projects. And the one that we partner with them on is called SUMAC. SUMAC is an initiative that serves mostly women, but victims of abuse. And they have women who come to workshops on a regular basis to learn how to make jewelry. Jewelry that can be sold, can become a source of income for them, and ultimately for their families.
SUMAC is a holistic center that assists women that have been suffering violence and abuse, and they assist not just the women but also their families. SUMAC is an opportunity for a new future, for a different life. When a woman comes to Sumac, they come with very low abilities or skills. Most of them are women that are indigenous. That's the reason that Sumac also supports with education to check opportunities for a study, maybe to get a degree, maybe to have the high school done. But also that's the way how we provide the training with the jewelry. Because even if you want to work in a flower farm, you have to be done with the high school. We provide opportunities that they can be independent on the financial area and not be dependent again of their abusers.
Es que teníamos un poco medio en el hogar, estábamos medio malos y había unos problemas. Entonces yo me fui a la fiscalía. Y entonces la fiscalía nos mandó a la judicatura. Y en la judicatura nos dio este apoyo que nos mandó a Suma.
¿Cómo fue tu vida antes de Suma?
Complicada. Que no tenía esa como base para enfocarme en las cosas que me gustan o quiero hacer. La desconfianza. El miedo también. Vergüenza tal vez. Eso más que todo.
Muchas mujeres han vivido como en círculos o ciclos de violencia permanentes en los que han perdido tal vez su horizonte, su objetivo. Recuerdo como varias en las que hay mujeres que nos han dicho, ¿no? Si es que yo no venía hoy, yo ya tenía planificado cómo iba a morir. Para nosotros es fundamental el hecho de que dentro de todo este proceso podamos tener como esta conexión espiritual, ¿no? Porque nos basamos mucho también en que en medio de la desesperación hay una esperanza.
Vivía ahogada ahí dentro. En mi mismo corazón me tenía todo guardado, las cosas que uno se pasa. Y entonces Suman me ha brindado es que tenemos que tener confianza. Y nos ha indicado todas las cosas buenas y no debemos estar ahogándonos nosotros mismos. Tenemos que compartirnos, conversar.
The healing process that happens at Sumac is something that has a lot of draw. It's a powerful thing and actually brings women from far away. Some of them will ride the bus for more than an hour to go and be part of this community. It speaks to the importance of not doing this alone, but doing this together with others. To be able to walk in community together through healing makes it a more whole process, as they're able to learn from each other and encourage each other and just be part of a group.
La transformación, yo creo que es algo muy subjetivo, pero se puede ver en los rostros cada vez que vienen a los talleres o a las charlas de acompañamiento.
Las mujeres cambian de maneras maravillosas en realidad. Se ha visto cambios muy grandes en los que se puede palpar desde una independencia, no solamente económica, sino también personal, una independencia física. ellas logran fomentar una red de apoyo, que es lo más importante en un proceso de restitución para sobrevivientes de violencia.
Como hemos aprendido juntas a hacer todas esas cosas y a poner en práctica cada vez más. Muchísimo. Para mí ha cambiado muchísimo como era antes y a cómo es ahora. Y agradezco mucho por eso.
De lo que complete lo que ya me siento, con el apoyo que me brindó, yo ya me siento segura ya. Ya no tengo temor. Ha valido compartir, hablar, entonces yo no sabía hablar más a veces. Me tenía más terror, no, del miedo, vivía miedo y terror y no, como que decían, vos avisas, algo te va a pasar, algo así. Y entonces eso me venía a la mente, entonces ya así es que yo le converso, ¿y cómo me van a ayudar? De repente, si yo tengo guardado y no converso a nadie, ¿cómo me voy a salir de este ahogado que estoy? Entonces, en esta suma que me apoyaron, me indicaron que nunca, no somos solas. Hay también ayuda para mujeres. Hay bastante ayuda, tiene que ser. Y entonces, sí, encontrar en suma.
You know, the way that our partners are responding to crises that they may be facing is changing over the years. And one of the things that I appreciate is more and more of an emphasis on the whole person, on emotional health, on paying attention to the effects of trauma and how that affects the individual and the community. And in the past, it's been more of attending to the immediate needs of food and shelter and clothing. And those things are still important. In a moment of crisis, those are very much needed. But more and more, we're looking beyond that and looking at what's next and how to have that whole person healing after a traumatic experience.
When we went to Chitokense, we drove through these gates and came into this beautiful home. And it was very peaceful. The sound of whirring machines, girls working very hard on the different clothing that they were sewing. A place that you could tell was filled with a lot of love.
Chitokense is a place where young women and girls that have been abused or they've been exploited or they're struggling in our community, they can come in and find acceptance. They don't have to prove themselves in terms of the kind of class they are from. They are accepted from the place where they are, and they are supported to find their skills, to find themselves. As girls, they're important before God, they're important to each other, and they're important in the community. Here at the center, Chitokense, we visualize a person from the individual level, but also to the community level. She gets to learn livelihood skills, and livelihood skills that help her to generate income when she goes back to the community. So for us, this is tailoring. She learns skills in making hairdressing, and she also gets to learn skills on gardening and agriculture. We do what we call weekly reflections, where we talk about how she sees herself. That helps us to think through issues we are facing, like self-esteem issues, trauma issues, challenges. If you are a leader and you're facing challenges, how it can be better, so that we can help the girls to understand that they also can lead people.
Healing doesn't happen just by training. It takes presence, it takes patience.
That being present with people is harder than just standing there to train somebody, being there and understanding them and being curious about them. I really believe that one changed life can really change a family, and it ends up changing the entire community, even to the level of the nation. I've seen it with several of them that have left the program. Well, once they found themselves and they healed, they became the people who went and reconciled even with the people that broke them.
imenisaidia kujua kushona, imenisaidia kujua mambo mengi na kusaidia hata wengine. Nimesaidia kama mama kujua, nimemfungulia biashara ndio, na mimi mwenyewe tu nimejiendeleza kupitia hii mashine kujua kushona.
How do you see yourself now?
I see myself as valuing things. I was not even able to do this kind of the work I'm doing now, beauty. Since it was okay, I was able to do it. And I see myself that I can able to do anything. Since I engaged there, it has helped me a lot, growing spiritually, mentally, emotionally, those things that have helped me.
I'm realizing now that the impact of our ministry should not be measured by numbers, but should be measured by the healing of the individual and how they're showing up for themselves and the community. So now when I think about where we are going as an organization, I ask myself, is this girl Hope? Is she experiencing healing? I know you, Carol. I know you, Rachel. Are you experiencing healing? I wake up every morning and serve the girls of Jitokeze because I believe that they have potential to live better lives. They have potential to get out of oppression. They have potential because of who created them. They are created in the image of God, and our God is loving, our God is whole, our God is a healer.
Who is my neighbor? My neighbor extends far beyond who lives next door to me. My neighbor would be anyone who has a need, anyone who's created in the image of Christ. And so as I have participated in serving with Covenant World Relief and Development, I've met many neighbors.
We've come to understand that our neighbor includes the rag pickers in Mumbai, the young women who are learning tailoring in Kenya. It's the women in workshops in Ecuador, and so many others. So the question of who is my neighbor was a question that was posed to Jesus, right? And he responded with the story of the Good Samaritan. And what I love about that parable is that certainly it is a call to us to love and love radically the other, the person who is different from us, right? This was a Jew and a Samaritan. It was a call to love the other. But really what I think makes it unique is it goes further than that. If we just stop there, that doesn't capture the whole point of that parable. Because the hero of that story is the Samaritan, it is the other. And the call at the end is to go and do likewise. So when I think about the answer to that question of who is my neighbor, it's looking also to say, how is my neighbor loving others? And what can I learn from them? How can I go and do likewise to what the other is doing, the person that I consider different than me? How are they loving and loving well?
For the last 80 years, CWRD has really answered the call of who is my neighbor? And it's not just seeing or hearing those that are here in our own communities, but in communities around the world. It's not just seeing and hearing them, it is also being compelled to action. In moving towards them with compassion, with mercy, with justice. And then in the moving, we ourselves are then moved towards. That it's about partnership, about about transformation, that we ourselves are changed because of these partnerships. As we respond to God's invitation.
In the next 80 years, it's my hope that we in the covenant will continue to pursue mutuality in partnerships. It's my hope that we will continue to reach people that we have never seen or heard about before. It's my hope that the list of neighbors will continue to grow and grow. And it's my hope that we go and do likewise.